parsha is Parshas Chayesara, which begins with the Torah relating to us the death of Sarah Imenu, who lived 127 years, and how Avram came to mourn her and to eulogize her. The Torah continues with a rather lengthy description, which we'll talk about in Yirtzeh Hashem today, of how Avram Avinu acquired a burial place for Sarah Imenu, the Ma'arat HaMachpelah, in Hebron. The Torah then spends the majority of the parsha detailing for us that now that Yitzchak is of marriageable age, Avraham Avinu sends his servant, who our rabbis tell us was Eliezer, his trusted servant, to find a wife from Avraham's homeland for Yitzchak Avinu. And it's a whole story of Rivka and her acts of kindness and the way she greets the servant, greets Eliezer, not only offering him water, but also water for all of the camels. And this act of chesed, this really abundance of loving kindness, marked her to be the next woman in the role of the covenantal community to marry Yitzchak Avinu. The parasha just ends with like almost end details of Avraham Avinu's life and marrying Keturah and having some more children and sending them away, so that really Yitzchak is going to be the progenitor of the Jewish people. If we look at the beginning of the parsha, we find parsha begins that Sarah's lifetime was 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years, the years of Sarah's life. And Sarah died in Kiryat Arba, which is Hebron in the land of Canaan. And Avram came to eulogize Sarah and to bewail her. Then, verse 3, Avram rose up from the presence of his dead and spoke to the children of Chait, saying, I'm an alien, a resident among you. Grant me an estate for a burial site, and achuzas kever, that I might bury my dead from before you. We'd really like to raise two questions on this section, one from the text itself and one from Rashi, that I'd like to be the focus of our shiur today. The first question is, we know we ended last week's parsha with the Akedah, with the story of the binding of Isaac. And that, as we know, is the greatest test, perhaps, of Avraham Avinu's life. Would not make sense that that's where the Torah should end. We really don't find much more about Avraham Avinu's life. This was really like the grand finale. So then why do we have this story of the purchasing of the burial site as really the last story of Avraham Avinu's life? Would it not make more sense that we end like on a real high? He came and he did the Akedah and he was able to, or he had the ability to offer up his son. And that should be the end, really, of Avraham Avinu's life. Okay, so you mentioned that Sarah Imenu died, and perhaps then he married Keturah, and the small details. But would it not have made more sense that we end with that high? Why is the Torah spending so much time, A, about the story of the acquisition of the Cave of Machpelah, and B, that this is the last story that we find out about Avraham Avinu's life? In simpler terms, what is the significance of this story that it takes such a focal place within the Torah, in particular, as the finale of Avraham Avinu's life? Question number two is to understand a Rashi which is familiar to all of us. It's a very troubling Rashi, and I think when we all learn this Rashi, we're a bit bothered by it. It's the first Rashi in this week's parsha. When Rashi asks about the Smichus Parshios, what's the connection between the story of the Akedah and the story of the death of Sarah Imenu? So it's brought down in the Art Scroll of Stone Chumash in source number 2. The sages teach that the narrative of Sarah's death and the Akedah follow one another to indicate that she died as a result of that event. She was told by the Satan that Avram had actually slaughtered Yitzchak, and she cried out in grief and died. And that's why it notes that this explains why Avram and Yitzchak were not present at her death. As the Pasuk says, that Avram came to eulogize Sarah. Why does he have to come? Was he not there? But no, he wasn't there. He was on his return trip from the Akedah. And it was during that time that Sarah Imenu died. I think what troubles us when reading this Rashi is it almost seems unfair that here Sarah Imenu, who's such a special woman, that she should die from such anguish. What a horrible way it seems that she should end her life hearing that her husband was ready or almost sacrificed or actually had slaughtered her son Yitzchak. How are we to understand this medrash what is the meaning trying to be conveyed in these thoughts. I'd like to try to take two approaches today. The first approach is going to focus primarily on the personality, on the persona of Sarah Imenu. And the second approach will respond to these questions, will focus on the personality and the persona of Avram Avinu. The first approach is based primarily on an essay of Rav Soloveitchik, found in Man of Faith in the Modern World, Reflections of the Rav, number 2, edited by Rabbi Besnit. And there's a whole chapter on the covenantal role of Sarah, of which I'd like to do selections together. So the Rav notes that really Avram and Sarah worked hand in hand. The famous Rashi, based on the pasuk of Etanefesh Asher Asu B'Charan, and the souls that they made in Haran, Rashi notes that Avram was Megayer, converted the men, while Sarah was hand in hand with him, she was converting the woman. And here the Rav notes in this essay that really men and women work hand in hand in the covenantal community and the covenantal relationship between man and God. And he notes in source number 3, the foremost distinguishing characteristic bestowed upon man is his divine image, his Tselem Elokim. And the Tselem Elokim denotes particular qualitative endowment such as a moral sense, free will, and intellect. Man partakes of these attributes within human limitations, while God's representation of these qualities is absolute. And that's why it's a Tselem Elokim. It's just really the shadow of God, where we have these qualities within the parameters of being human. But as he knows, Pasuk says, and God created man with his image. And the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. In their spiritual natures, they were created equally. They were equally worthy. This divine gift of Tselem Elokim, of the divine image, was both given to a man and woman. Two humans were created, continuing in the Rav, who differ from each other metaphysically, not only physiologically, even as they both partake of divine qualities. And this contradicts the perverse notion that Judaism regards woman as being inferior to man. It also cuts away another false notion that there's no distinction between them in terms of their spiritual personalities. Two sexes were formed not only for the purpose of procreation, but they constitute existential originals. They differ in their physical natures. Yet even as we recognize metaphysical differences, explains the Rav, we insist that they do not differ axiologically as regards their worthiness before God. So although they function differently, although they may have different attributes, that doesn't mean that one is more worthy in front of God than the other, because both bear his image, which is the ultimate criterion of value. Both may be, quote-unquote, called to the colors to assume leadership roles as history makers, as God's messengers. We have so many models, Sarah, Miriam, Devorah, Esther. God created a dual human existence, man and woman, because they complement one another. They represent two existential destinies which together form one destiny, which is a more perfect one. And this really describes the relationship between Avram Avinu and Sarah Imenu. We see this, explains the Rav, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram Avinu that he's going to have a child from Sarah, whose name is Yitzchak. And Avram Avinu turns to God and says, may it be granted that Yishmael live before you. I mean, you know, I'm satisfied you've given me one child. You know, I'm not going to, can't really ask for more. To which HaKadosh Baruch Hu replies, but Aval, your wife Sarah, will bear you a son, and you shall call him Isaac. And I will keep my covenant with him as an everlasting treaty. What is God saying here? So explains the Rav in Source 5, it's the key word Aval, but. God is explaining that his covenant cannot be realized without Isaac. Why? Because Isaac, Yitzchak, is the son of Sarah. Aval Sarah Ishtecha Yoled, God will emerge out of both of you. But Yishmael is only derived from you. And there can be no covenant without Sarah. This is the important point. It's not just a question that Avram Avinu have a child, and that child continues this covenantal relationship between man and God. The child has to be from both members, really, that are working together in forming this covenant. Avram without Sarah cannot reproduce the covenant. Aval Sara Ishtacha Yoled L'cha Ben, it has to be Sara. She has to be, as Avram is the father of the covenantal community, Sarah has to be the mother of this community. And he notes so beautifully, where you see this interrelationship between both of them, that they work hand in hand in partnership. We see this when the names are changed for Avram and Sarah. When God tells Avraham that Sarah's name is going to be changed, he says, source 6, God said to Avraham, Sarah, your wife, do not call her by the name Sarai, for Sarah is her name. He is not informed that henceforth her name will be Sarah, but that it is Sarah, suggesting that she had acquired this name previously, ki Sarah Shema. This is unlike Avraham, who God says to him, no longer shall you be called Avraham, but you shall be called Avraham. In Sarah's case, the word is refers to an earlier change. In Avram's name change, the word shall become suggests that an order is now going into effect. But by Sarah, it's as if the order has already gone into effect. But when was her name changed? But this is the whole beauty. The answer is, at the very moment when Avram's name was changed, there was an existential interdependence between both. The name change of both involved the addition of a letter from God's name, signifying they will share a spiritual role which will reach out into the nations of the world, where Avram will be the father of multitudes while Sarah will be crowned as the mother of multitudes. At what point was Sarah's name changed? It was changed at the very moment that Avram's name changed from Avram to Abraham. At that very moment, Sarai's name was changed to Sarah, because they work in unison, they work as a partnership together. In a word, says the Rav in 7, not only did man and woman achieve human dignity together, creation, both in God's image, but they also attained together and only together covenantal sanctity, being elected by God to be the founders of a new faith. And perhaps the greatest proof that Avram and Sarah worked hand in hand, that v'tanefesh asher asu b'charan, the souls that they created together, the necessity that it would be Sarah Imenu that would give birth to Yitzchak, that Sarah's name was changed at the very moment that Avram's name was changed. Perhaps the greatest proof of the relationship between Avram and Sarah as the models of this covenantal community is the fact, as the Rav points out in 10, that their covenantal interdependence is further indicated by the fact that the Torah does not dwell in Avram's life after Sarah's death. Though he survived her by many years, he knew that his mission as the father of the covenantal community was concluded. And from that point, all he had to do was to act out the last part of the drama and walk off the covenantal stage and make room for someone else to succeed him. Only two items remained for him to complete: to purchase the cave of the Machpelah as a burial place for Sarah, and to arrange for the marriage of his son Yitzchak. And really, as the Rav points out, the marriage of his son Yitzchak is only to now find a replacement in this new covenantal community. And that's the climax, really, the marriage of Rivka and Yitzchak. The Torah tells us that Yitzchak brought Rivka into his mother Sarah's tent, and he married her. And as Rashi tells us, rabbis tell us, that all the signs and the wondrous things that were found in Sarah Imenu's tent returned when Rivka Imenu was brought into that tent. Because now we have a new partnership between Yitzchak and Rivka, who can now take the place of the role that Avram and Sarah played out for so many years. This then is perhaps reason number one why the Torah does not end with the story of the Akedah, but it's important to end with the death of Sarah Imenu. Because the death of Sarah Imenu is really the end of Avraham Avinu's life. It's not so much that trial of bringing up Yitzchak, but the Torah is telling us that we work here in a partnership. That's the whole beauty of a marriage, where a husband and wife together can work in doing the mission of God in this world. When Sarah Imenu dies, that's the end of Avraham Avinu's life, and therefore we end with this story. And that's really the finale of his life. And that's how the Rav explains the two terms that are found in Avraham Avinu mourning for his wife. In source 11, he explains, And Avram came to mourn for Sarah, lispo, to eulogize, and to weep for her, lifkota. And he notes that weeping and mourning are two different stages in bereavement. Weeping is the primeval, instinctive reaction to a tragedy, especially one that strikes without warning. It is not a deliberate performance. It bursts forth spontaneously. While mourning, hesped, in contrast, is a rational and planned performance. It's an act of appraisal, an attempt to evaluate the repercussions of what has transpired. With the death of Sarah, Avram had suffered a double loss. First was a personal sorrow, the death of his wife, and the second was the sorrow that now the covenant, which was his raison d'etre of all his strivings, would come to an end. So therefore, in source 13, the first thing he did was to appraise Sarah's contribution, lispod et Sarah, to review the formation and successful growth of a covenantal community. And in a real sense, it's an appraisal of his life as well. That's why it's the finale. The role she played continuing in the Rav and what she had accomplished. He mourned her departure together with the many thousands of other adherents of the covenant who had adopted the faith. He mourned the passing of a great woman in objective categories. Only after the evaluative presentation did Avram break down in tears and cries. Others could identify with his hesped, but no one could share his personal pain. That's the first lispod et Sarah, to eulogize her, and then lifkota, to weep her. The one thing we need to understand, however, on this level, is that explains why the Torah goes through the description, which it doesn't really in any other place, in such detail of the death of a woman. That's really the end of the covenantal community that Avram and Sarah worked together. But why then do we need the details of her being buried in Maris Machpelah and the acquisition of this gravesite? So here I'd like to share an insight based on the Or Gedaliahu, which is really based on a lot of the Shem Yishmuel as well, Rav Gedal Yishur. In his Iyunim in Parshas Chayisara, in source 14, he brings down the famous Medrash Tanhuma, which explains that the hesped, the eulogy that Avraham Avinu said for Sarah Imenu, is none other than that famous Eshet Chayil, the 31st chapter of Proverbs, the woman of valor, which we have accustomed to sing on Friday night. And it goes through the entire perek. The Medrash goes through the entire perek, ascribing each verse to different qualities that were found in Sarah Imenu. So, for example, the Or Gedaliahu notes from the Medrash Tanhuma, Batach Balek Bala, her husband trusted in her. When was this? When they were in Egypt, and he said to her, Imri na achotia, say that you are my sister, I am your brother. In that way, Avraham Avinu would not be harmed on account of Sarah Imenu being taken by the king, by Paro. Continuing, Gematlutu tov v'lora kol yamei chayeha, she did good and not bad. Darsha semer pishtim, when is Darsha semer pishtim, that she's involved in wool and linen, and we know that wool and linen are two opposites, right? Shatnez, that's Yitzchak and Yishmael separating both. And zamama sadeh v'tikachehu, zamama v'natla sadeh machpelah v'sham nikbara. This is a reference to envisioning a field and acquiring it. This is a reference to the Maris HaMachpelah, which it's really called on Sarah, even though it was acquired after her death. So the Or Gedaliahu, in explaining this Medrash, says very beautifully. He says, we know that Avram and Sarah in source 15, Tiknu Chet Adam V'Chava, they really were mitakein, they really rectified the sin of the first man and woman. As the Or Gedaliahu notes, that Avraham was metakein the sin of Adam, and Sarah was metakein the sin of Chava. And he notes in his footnote that where is Avraham metakein the sin of Chava, the problem with Avraham being metakein the sin of Adam, that the problem of Adam was that he listened to his wife. While by Avraham it says, Kol Asher Tomar, Sarah Shema Bekola, where Avram was attacking this by listening to his wife and his wife giving him the correct advice. What does it mean, though, when we say that Sarah fixed with the correct balance for the sin of Chava. So he explains that we really know that the whole concept of sin as existed after the sin, which was the direct result of Chava's action, was the fact that we now have a tarovet shel tov v'ra, a mixture of good and evil. Because although we have the concept of ra before the sin, it remained outside. It was a devar nifrat. It was something external. It wasn't intermingled. However, after the sin, tov and ra became mixed up together. And the job of Sarah, and that's how explains Gemalu Tov Lo Ra, Tov Lo Ra Klo Yimei Chayeha, is that she separated the Tov and the Ra, the good and the bad. She was able, Vaita Kula Tov, she was all goodness, L'Takein Cheta Shochava Shinatan L'Adam HaRishon L'Chom Eitzadah Tov Ra. Sarah Imenu was able to go back to the level of Chava, of being able to see the good and not the bad, and to separate the good and bad one from another. And that's the concept of Darshar Semiro Pishtim, of making that separation between good and bad, in sending away Yishmael from Yitzchak. Because Yishmael was a paradigm of someone who had good and evil mixed up in him. On the one hand, he was the son of Avraham Avinu. He had a bris milah at the age of 13. There was a lot of good in him, but there's also a lot of evil in him. And it takes a very discerning person to realize that when you have good and evil mixed up in a person, if you're not going to separate that, so then the evil is going to really influence other people around them. And that, says the Urgadayahu, was the job of the Imahos. The job of the Imahos was to attack the sin of Chava. The sin of Chava was bringing into the world a mixture of good and bad. The Imahos had to separate out this good and bad. That's why Sarimenu did it by sending away Yishmael. And that's why it's in that story where Avram listens to Sarah. That's the tikkun for Adam. As well as the next woman we mentioned, Rivka, who had to separate between Esav and Yaakov Avinu, which Yitzchak perhaps had more of a difficult time, everyone understands the story. It's this woman's insight that had the ability to separate the two. In fact, Rabbi Feldman, in that very famous book, The River, the Kettle, and the Bird, it's one of the forerunner books in terms of Shalom Bayis, marital harmony, an excellent, excellent book, notes in source number 19 that women have a greater natural orientation towards spirituality than men, which is why the sages say that reward promised to women in the world to come is greater than that promised to the men, and that's why they didn't just succumb to the temptation of the worshipping of the golden calf. And it continues in 20, it is because of their spiritual sensitivity and more temperate drives and passions that women have a keener sense for judging situations and individuals. That's your job, to be mevarer, to really distinguish between trove and ra. He continues, Rabbi Feldman, classically it has always been women in Jewish history who have warded off disaster through this insight. Sarah demanded that Yishmael be driven away because she noticed in him evil qualities which posed a threat to her son Yitzchak's spiritual development. Rivka saw Esav's true wicked nature even while her husband Yitzchak was planning to give him the blessing. We have the wife of Om Ben Pelet who kept her husband away from the rebellion of Korach. Abigail knew how to convince David HaMelech to keep away from taking a sword in improper battle. And this is the nature of a woman, to the point that the sages say a woman has deeper insight even to a guest character. Rabbi Feldman knows it goes without saying, therefore, that she recognizes the true character of the husband with whom she constantly lives, and that's why there should be a real open honesty in all facets of life, religious, spiritual, material, where the husband and wife really work together, because the wife has the ability to give these tremendous insights to her husband. So it's therefore on this level that we understand that if we're going to end really covenantal community partnership number one, Avram and Sarah, and we're ending it noting the passing of Sarah Imenu, and we're speaking about the hesped, the eulogy of Sarah Imenu, with the ability to distinguish between good and evil, so it therefore makes tremendous amount of sense that the closure of her death should be her burial in Maris HaMachpelah. the Orgadayahu notes that it was the Maris HaMachpela was the place where Chava, Adam and Chava were buried. The fact that Sarai Menu is put to rest in this grave site, and Zama Sadevati Kachehu, it says if the Me'ara is called, the cave, and this the Maris HaMachpela is really called on her name, is really a reference to the fact that she was Metakein, she was the one who rectified the sin of Chava, and therefore she was worthy to be buried there. So the Torah goes through the story of the acquisition of this piece of land to show us that it was Sarah who merited to be buried in this particular piece, in this kever, because this is the place where Adam and Chava were buried, and Sarah's role as an individual was to attack in the sin of Chava. One final idea we need to point out on this level of speaking about the greatness of Sarah Imenu and the praise that the Torah gives to this great woman is how then are we to understand that original Rashi we mentioned that Sarah Imenu died really out of fright, or however you may want to understand it, in hearing that Aaron Avinu had sacrificed her son. So I think it's very important to look at the insight once again of the Or Gedayahu, which is echoed in the Chasam Sofer as well. We begin with the Or Gedayahu in 21, who explains, it wasn't even a question that Sarai Menu would agree that Yitzchak should be a korban, and that Avram Avinu should be Mekayim, should fulfill the will of God. Rather, when she heard about this Masa Akedah, she understood to what levels her husband and her son must have reached in coming so close to God. And it was her deep desire to be on the same level, to reach out and to attain the level that they themselves had reached. And therefore, Lachein akol panim masran nafsha ba'ava u'betahara liparein me'olam hazeh. She, so to speak, wanted to give up her soul to join this high level. Be'et ratzon v'sha kedusha, at this particular auspicious time of such kedusha, of such holiness, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu agreed to this and took away her soul. So it's not chas v'shalom that she died out of terror. She died with this deep desire to join the level of love of Mesiris Nefesh, of really giving up herself completely, that she saw exemplified in this story by her husband and her son. She too wanted to attain this level, and it was so to speak that her soul jumped out to join this high level, to really leave this world at the moment of Kedusha. As we've spoken about many parashas ago, the concept of Nadav and Avihu, kivyachol, giving up their souls to God. The Chasam Sofer in Source 22 notes a similar idea. He says that the culmination of the Akedah on a level so high that only she and not even Avram and Yitzchak could attain it. Ideally, the father and son who journeyed to the Akedah should have been able to remain on the spiritual plateau they achieved at Mount Moriah, without ever returning to the mundane world they had left behind. However, as a result of Avram's parting words to his servants, "We will worship and we will return to you," he and his son were compelled to descend from the heights they had reached on the mountain and return to less lofty levels. Sarah, on the other hand, was even a greater prophet than her husband. Although she had not been present at the Akedah, she reacted to the news of her son's trial by capitulating to a spiritual peak from which she never descended. Immediately her soul bound itself to God with so firm an attachment that it lost interest in returning to the world. This is really the description of Sarah Imenu, and what a fitting description as the close of Avraham Avinu and Sarah Imenu's life. Where Avraham Avinu, really the close of his life is the Akedah and his desire to come close to God. The parasha begins now with the response of Sarah Imenu, that she too had such a close desire. It's what we mentioned earlier, it's Ve'tanefesh Asher Asu B'Charan, and the souls that they made together in Haran. They worked as a team. They reached high spiritual levels as a team. Although Avraham Avinu had to come back to this world, Sarai Imenu opted to end her life on this high level, and this is how our parsha begins, with the response to Sarai Imenu to the Akedah, to the end of this relationship between Avram and Sarah as the first father and mother of the covenantal community, and the burying of Sarah in the Maras HaMachpelah to signify that she indeed had reached the level of Chava, the woman, the first woman who was buried there and was metaken, and she fixed that which Chava brought into this world. That's level number one. Level number two of why we have the focus on this story is focusing not so much on Sarah Imenu, but focusing on Avram Avinu. And the following insights that we'll discuss now are based on an essay by Rav Chaim Matityahu Salomon, Matityahu Chaim, Matnat Chaim, in his new sefer called Matnat Chaim Ma'amarim, the essays of Rav Salomon, the Mashkiach of Lakewood Yeshiva presently. And the essay is called Nisayon Kfurat Sarah, the test of the burial of Sarah. So in Surah 23, the Matnat Chaim notes a very fascinating, very powerful Rabbeinu Yonah. We know the Mishnah in Ethics of the Fathers list that Avraham Avinu went through 10 Nisyonos, through 10 trials. And the Rishonim, the commentators on the Mishnah, the Rambam, Rashi, Rabbeinu Yonah, all give different lists of what are the 10 trials. Right? Aside from the trial of the Akedah, where it says, Va'alokim Nisat Avraham, and God tested Avraham, we don't have the word Nisayon, we don't have the word trial. So the question is, what do you count as a trial, what don't you? Some commentators count the first story of Avraham Avinu's life in the Kivshan HaEsh, in the fiery furnace, as a trial, even though it's not found in our text itself. Most commentators, as we've noted before, count the final, the grand finale, the tenth trial, the most difficult trial, as the Akedah. The Rabbeinu Yonah, however, disagrees. And he says, and this is so beautiful, he says, in Surah 23, Rabbeinu Yonah moneb minyana saran nisyonot. When Rabbeinu Yonah counts the 10 trials, he counts the trial of the Akedah, the binding of Isaac, as the ninth trial. And the 10th trial, which is the most difficult trial, is the Kvura Sarah, the burial of Sarah. What was the trial? So he notes that Kadosh Baruch Hu told Abraham, Kum hitalech ba'aretz, walk through the land, la'arkah l'rachba, from its width to its length. Ki l'chatnen, I'm going to give you the land. U'kishameta ishto, when his wife died, lo matza makom l'kavra, ad shekano v'lo hir. When it came time for him to bury his wife, and he needed a piece of land, he didn't have a piece of land. God did not set up the situation that someone would come over to him and say, oh, Avraham Avinu, you just lost your wife. Here's a piece of land. Here's a gift. Go bury your wife. No. He had to have all these negotiations, and the Torah goes into length about these negotiations. He goes into all these negotiations, has to buy for an exorbitant amount of money, below here, here, but he does not question God's mercy, God's judgment, and the way God treats him. Even though he promised him the land, he doesn't question the fact that he has to go through so much ordeal in order to acquire this land. There's another medrash which echoes this idea that the aspect of the acquisition of the burial of Sarah, the place to bury Sarah, was even greater than the Akedah. It's a fascinating, fascinating Gemara, which says that as an introduction to the book of Eov, the book of Job, the Satan comes in front of God, b'zot halashon, in this language, and says, Ribono shalolam, master of the universe, shatatati b'chol haolam, I've traveled through the land, v'lo matzati ne'eman ke'avdecha Avraham, and I found no one as ne'eman, as worthy, as loyal as Avraham, as your servant Avraham. Shamartelo, because you told him, Kumi talech baris l'arkal l'rachba ki l'chat nena, you promised him the land. U'b'sha'a shebikesh likbor Sarah, and when he wanted to bury Sarah, he didn't find a place to bury her. V'lo hir hir achar midotecha, and he didn't question your ways, God. So ask the Matnat Chaim the following questions on both the Gemara and the Rabbeinu Yonah. The first and most obvious question is, give me a break. How are we to understand that the test of not finding a piece of land, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised him a piece of land, okay, that could be a challenge. That could be a test. But does that in any way compare to the test of the Akedah to take your only beloved son and offer him up as a sacrifice? I mean, it's like day and night. How can we then say that this is the greatest test? How can we understand the Gemara which says that the Satan, in praising Avraham Avinu, what was the greatest praise? He didn't say, I have found no one as trustworthy as Avraham, who is willing to give up his son, his beloved son, who he loved for you. Rather, what does he say? When he was promised the land and his wife died, he couldn't find a place to bury her. How do we understand this? And secondly, Asmat Nat Chaim, where even do we see that Avraham Avinu didn't doubt God, or that Avraham Avinu indeed passed his test? We know, as we've spoken about before in Parshas Lech Lecha, that the concept of the Nisayon is like a banner to raise up to other people to see one's loyalty to God. So in the Akedah, that's clear. He built the altar. He put his son on the altar. He did an action. Here, this is all going through the mindset of Avraham Avinu. Where even do we see any action which would reflect the fact that he was not Mahar here, he didn't question the ways of God? So the Matan Chaim explains the following. He says, what does it even mean? What do we mean to say that Avraham Avinu doesn't question God? So he explains very simply in Source 26. Avraham Avinu's wife dies. He's in a very difficult situation. In his mind, he doesn't say, you know, God, you're so good, and you're so full of goodness, and you made such a promise to me that for sure I would have expected that at this time of difficulty in my life, where my wife has died, for sure you would provide for me an opportunity to bury my wife, that I wouldn't have to go through all of these hardships. But he doesn't say this. In fact, we find that Avraham Avinu goes through all of these negotiations with full gratitude to God for giving him the opportunity to acquire this land. Instead of arguing with God or having this doubt in his mind, saying, well, why is God putting me through this? Why doesn't just someone come over to me and hand me a deed of land and say, this is a gift to you? Avraham Avinu is grateful for the fact that he's able to buy this land. He doesn't question why doesn't someone give it to him. And when he does have to acquire it, he's grateful to God for the ability to acquire it. Where do we see, in terms of a physical action, by the Akedah we had that action, that he shows his gratitude to God, that he's not even questioning God, but rather fakir, he's really grateful to God for even being able to acquire it with money. So our rabbis learned this out from the fact that in the beginning of the story, as noted, if we go back to source 1, beginning of the story in verse 7, it says, and Avraham rose up and bowed down to the members of the council. But after they're willing to give him the piece of land, source 28, verse 12, it says, so Avraham bowed down, not as we saw earlier, to the members of the council, but it has a different word here, lifnei, before the members of the council. Say the Medrash and Medrash Rabbah, that when it says, Vayishtachu Avraham lifnei am haaretz, in front of the people of the land, shemikan, from here, shemodim al b'sara tova, where we show our gratitude to God when we hear good news. When Avraham Avinu bows now, when they're willing to give him the land, when he's willing to purchase the land, he's not bowing to B'nai Faith. That would be to the members of the council. But he's bowing Lifnei B'nai Faith in front of them. He's really bowing to God. He's bowing to God, as the Matnat Chaim says, Shekani Shishachavel Hashem, he bows to God, Lahodot Ala B'sara Tova, to thank God for the good news. Mitoch hergesh amok, with a deep feeling, shiv kibel kam matanat chinam, really a gift from God, but often bilti mitzupa, without expecting anything in return for it. This is the greatness of Avraham Avinu. at the time of difficulty of his wife's death, he's not mahar here, he doesn't question God, but rather is grateful to God for the opportunity to acquire this piece of land, and he vows accordingly. And it's interesting to note, on this level, explains the Matnat Chaim based on Yalkut Shimoni, that the Satan coming in this guise to tell Sarah about how her husband just sacrificed her son seems a little bit odd, since the Satan's job is not the job of the Malach HaMavet, not the job of the Angel of Death. So what is the Satan doing here killing Sarah? His job is to mess people up, but not necessarily to kill them. That's the Malach HaMavet's job. So explains the Matnat Chaim so beautifully. He says, when the Satan saw that he was not able to trip Avraham in the Akedah, that Avraham did not falter in any way in his devotion to God, so the Satan tried a new way of getting at Avraham Avinu, and that was through the death of Sarah Imenu. It's through the death of Sarah Imenu that the Satan hoped that when Avraham Avinu would come home really exuberant over the fact that he was successful in passing this nisayon and passing this test, and he was on a tremendous high, to then have him return to meet a tremendous low, to hear the fact that his wife had died, this suddenness to go from great heights to great depths, this is what the Satan was trying to do in order for Avraham Avinu then to question God's fairness. Having Avraham Avinu say, God, I just went through so much for you. This is the way you repay me? This is the way you show me my loyalty and my level of commitment and connection to you? The Satan speaking to Sarah in this way was really to try to harm Avraham Avinu in order to get him into a frame of mind to challenge God. And now, in coming to the state of not having this burial place, and nevertheless, even though he went from a great high to a great low, he's not challenging God. This is the ability of Avraham Avinu to pass this test. But the question remains. Okay, so he was going through a tremendous amount of emotional trauma, emotional difficulty. And he doesn't argue with God. And he's grateful for the fact that he can acquire this piece of land. But can we still argue that this is a greater test, that he doesn't question the ways of God than the Akedah, than sacrificing one's own son? So here, my friends, is the key. This Nekuda the Matnat Chaim brings is really the essence of what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying, that this is a 10th test, and has tremendous, tremendous implications for our life. Says the Matnat Chaim the following. When a person goes through a very difficult test in life, generally the person is aware during the test that I am now currently going through, or one is currently going through, a major nisayon in life, a major test. And we know that when we go through a major test and we realize it's a major test, then we garnish up all our energies, all our emotional reserves, and we fight it head on. And we do all that we need to do in order to be successful. And that was the paradigm of the nisayon of the test of the Akedah. Says the Matnat Chaim, you know, there's even a greater test in life. And you know what that greater test in life is? He says that the greater test in life is what the Matnat Chaim means when he says, Mashe, Ein kein kashir olam kimin hago noheg, Vahadam asuk bechayav hayom yomiim behetzach hadat, mit amsut biyira virak yirato tivi molichto. We're talking about on the everyday occurrences of life, the yom yomiim, what happens every day within our lives. These are the major tests that a person really has in life. When we have a major test in life, so we know we're going through a major test, so then we really work on it. But what happens when we have the day-to-day goings-on in life, the day-to-day dealings of life, like in our case, acquiring a piece of field? when we don't think it's a nisayon, when we don't think it's a trial, when we don't think it's such a big deal. And yet, in these small little aspects of life, we maintain our standard of commitment to God. That shows the greatness of a person. That when we don't realize we're being tested, when we go through the yom yomi, the daily aspects of life, and we're able to say, no matter what happens, I believe in God. I affirm that all that God does for me is for the good. That's where you really see the ne'emanut. We really see the loyalty of a person to God. On this level, why is the tenth test, or why is the story of the acquisition of the cave of Machpelah written as the end, the grand finale of our Avinu's life? The answer is clear. Because this was the tenth test. This was the greatness of Avraham Avinu. That not only could he pass the test when he knows he was being tested, and he was going through all that difficulty, but the greatness in life is when you don't realize necessarily you're going through a test. You think that this is the way life works, the day-to-day dealings in life. Do you then challenge God when you're not on your best, when you're not utilizing your fullest energy? And yet you maintain that commitment, you maintain that standard and that relationship. That's the concept of Avraham Avinu, who was ne'eman levavo, umatzate levavo ne'eman lefanecha. This is the loyalty, the trustworthiness that Avraham Avinu showed. And that's why this is a grand finale of his life. We're in, not only in the great aspects of life, but in the small details of life, he was able to maintain this high level of closeness to God. And this is really the challenge of every person. In the day-to-day aspects of life, to be a good person. When we know we're being seen and shown, and it's outside and everyone's watching, it's easy to maintain a high level. But how about the day-to-day living? How about the day-to-day interactions? Do we still maintain the same standard of living? Are we able to say, like Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, the Zichrono Livracha, was able to say at his wife's funeral, that I don't have to ask you forgiveness for anything, because we never had any quarrels. Living with a spouse for many, many years, to be able to maintain that level, that's the greatness of a person. That's really the complement and grand finale of Avraham Avinu's life. To be able to maintain this trustworthiness on a day-in, day-out level, even not being cognizant that he was being tested. And this, in conclusion, is really the challenge for all of us in our relationship with God. The beautiful Sfas that notes that in describing the acquisition of the field, the Torah goes into detail, almost like in a deed, of what exactly he acquired. Source 36, verse 17, the Torah tells us, and Ephraim's field, which was in Machpelah, facing Mamre, the fields and the cave within it, and all the trees in the field within all its surrounding boundaries, was confirmed as Avraham's, as a purchase in the view of the children of Chet. So why do we need to know, as the Sfas Emes, all of these details of the tree, the surrounding boundaries, the field, the cave? He says this is just but a metaphor. Shitzarich ha'adam la'haid al-kol davar prati sheyesh ba'olam, lit kasher hakol b'Hashem Yisparach. Just like all aspects of the field were connected to Avraham Avinu, all aspects of our lives have to be connected to God. The major aspects of life, we have to say this is something decreed by God, and the minor things in life, the small things that happen to us, to be able to say Kam Zulatova, this is too, is for the best, or Baruch Hashem, I thank Hashem, to include the cognizance of God, and that we are having an ongoing relationship with God every moment of our lives. That's our challenge. As the famous Kutzkervort, Rabbi Chaim Feinberg, brings down on Leaping Souls in 38, he says there is, of course, as Kutzker ruled, a difference between the I as inner point and the I as ego. Ego is self-oriented. The inner point is God-oriented. Ego savors the world with all of its carnal tastes, while the inner point looks past the veil of self, yearning for God. And that's really the message of Avraham Avinu's 10th trial. To go beyond the eye of the ego and think of self all day long, but even in the everyday, daily dealings of life, to go beyond the eye as ego to the eye as the inner point, to go past the veil of self, yearning for God, yearning for relationship with God in every aspect of life. And perhaps in this way too, we can come full circle and say that both Amram Avinu and Sarah were exemplary models in this respect. As Rashi notes also in our pasuk, if Shnei Chaye Sarah, these were the lives of Sarah, he notes, Kulan Shavim Latova, they were all for the good. That all of her years were years of goodness. All of her days were days of goodness. As Medrash says on this pasuk, that all of her days were Yemei Tmimim, the days of the perfect. So once again, we find that Avram and Sarah are the models, not only in terms of a covenantal community and what they impart to others, but their lives per se really personified and exemplified this concept of being able to see in every single day, Kulan Shavim Latova, everything is for the good, all that God does is for the good, to see beyond the ego, to go past the veil of self in a yearning for God. So therefore, in conclusion, we can, I think, have a better understanding of why this section is the grand finale of Abraham's life. On the one hand, this is the culmination of Sarah Imenu's life. And when Sarah Imenu's parting, that's really the end of Avraham Avinu as well, because they worked in partnership together. And therefore, the Torah goes out of its way to tell us she was buried in the grave where Chava was buried, because she was the one who rectified Chava's sin. On the second level, the Torah tells us this story to tell us the tenth test of Abraham, to tell us what the Satan thought was so great about Abraham. That's the day-to-day test where Abraham didn't question God, but was thankful for God for the ability to acquire the land, and didn't ask God in this terrible, traumatic time, why didn't you give this to me as a free gift? And this, too, is the meaning of the Rashi. On one level, it's showing the greatness of Sarah Imenu attaching herself to God. On the second level, it was a diversive tactic in order to try to bring Avraham Avinu down into a mental state from a high level to a low level to have him question God. But both Avram and Sarah represent Kulam Shavim Latova. All their years were years of goodness. All their days were days of goodness, where they saw godliness in every aspect of their lives. And that's really the model for us in looking in our lives beyond ourselves, beyond our needs only, and seeing how do we fit into the eye of the inner self to relationship with God.